Election College, Episode 38, The Election of 1892. In this episode, two presidents square off in a rematch.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
So Jason, the last episode we saw Grover Cleveland pretty much just get ousted right on his butt by Benjamin Harrison.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. It's kind of crazy because Cleveland won the popular vote.
That dang old Electoral College is at it again.
Man, if it wasn't for that Electoral College, we wouldn't have probably had much inspiration for our name.
Yeah, that's true. It was entirely inspired by that. But we've got Harrison just running the place like a boss, but people don't much love him. I mean, he's not terribly unpopular, but he's also not really all that popular at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans were so fragmented anyway. You're not going to make too many people. I mean, if you're a Republican, you're just not very happy with other people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that has stopped on either side of the coin. But I say that as a recovering Republican myself, I guess you could say. But I'm not really much of anything at the moment. Anyway,
that would mean that you're exactly like a Republican.
Yeah, you got it, man. remember Blaine? Remember that guy?
Yeah, Blaine.
Yeah, he's kind of still sticking around, and well, a bunch of people are like, hey, we got to get rid of Benjamin Harrison. We need to get rid of him, and let's get Blaine in here. And, you know, Blaine had been a nominee before, and Harrison's like, well, I don't really want to do the presidency thing again, but I gotta say, I really hate Blaine. So I think I'm the only one who can stop him. I'm like Superman in this instance. I'm the only one who can take care of this deal.
Yeah, it's like a hot potato. It's like, I don't want you to be president. But here you go, but I just don't know what to do.
Well, since Blaine had no idea what to do either, he really wasn't all that interested in it. He had fought against Cleveland once before back in 1884. His health was declining. Three of his children had died in the last 4 years. Or I'm sorry, last 2 years. And he just really said, no, I'm not going to run. I don't want to run. I don't really care to. But nobody really wanted to push him much past that. So pretty much Benjamin Harrison said that, hey, Blaine, you either say you're running or you're not. Or you can resign your position as Secretary of State.
Ooh.
Sorry. Yeah.
Playing hardball.
Kind of throwing his weight around.
Yeah. So you had a couple of guys from Ohio. You had Senator John Sherman. He was one of the leading candidates back 4 years ago in 1888. And you had Governor William McKinley of Ohio. He was also mentioned, but it just wasn't time for them. And you had a few other people who kind of threw their hats in the, I don't know, what would you say? Hats in the ring? Not very good with my cliches.
That is the saying, after all. So, they threw their hats in the pond.
Right. So they're just kind of like, okay, well, all right, Benny.
Well, either way, whatever it worked out, the Republicans decided they were going to nominate the old incumbent. You know, do the normal thing that everybody does. And why not? Why don't we just go ahead and nominate him during the convention, right on the first ballot, not even have a contention about it?
Yeah, but it's just rough. It's just rough being a vice president. Yeah. Levi Morton was like, no, I've had enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't do this. No. And I mean, it didn't help that Harrison pretty much hated him. He didn't want to keep him on the ticket either. I don't know if he was entirely just disliked him or if it was also partially, I think I can win more handily if I don't have Morton on the ticket. Either way, we're not going to do this. So,
yeah. So Whitelaw Reed, he's our man.
Yeah, Whitelaw is a sick, nasty name.
Hey, if your name is Whitelaw, I'm sorry. My cousin, he just doesn't like your name.
No. Sick, nasty means good. It's like bad. You know, oh, man, that's bad. Oh, but it's okay. Really good. You know, like 1985.
It's a little generational gap there.
I suppose you could say that.
Yeah, so Whitelaw, that bad name, Reed. He was the editor of the New York Tribune, and he also served as the ambassador to France. He got the VP nomination.
Congrats, Whitelaw. Congrats.
Woohoo! That might be the next Smith baby name.
I don't know. It's kind of crazy, man. So, pretty much at this point, everybody's like, well, you know, Grover Cleveland wasn't all that bad. We did vote him into power anyway. I mean, it's just the Electoral College thing screwed it up. So why don't we go ahead and do that? And then everybody's like, okay, yeah, that's fine, except we have some reservations.
Yeah, but really, I mean, there were a couple of guys. There were, I can't speak. Henry Watterson and Charles Dana. They thought that, hey, this might be a good idea. Let's run. But Cleveland, he was the man. And they were like, yeah, forget that. We want the Democrats to win. So we're just going to shut up now.
Right. Yeah. We had four or five other people step into place and nobody really could do what Cleveland could do. And that's pretty much the theme of this episode.
Yeah.
That's the name of this episode now. Nobody can do what Cleveland can do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny too. I mean, the Clevelands, we mentioned in the previous episode about Mrs. Cleveland, Frances, who also went by the name Frank. She was something else. And something else, I mean, in a really good way. She was very much Cleveland's junior. I think she was like 21 when she became first lady.
Yeah, she was young for sure.
And, you know, you can just see her leaving the White House in 1889 saying, you know, we'll be back. Keep the house really good for us and all that. But while they are doing their thing, doing the speaker circuit or whatever you do when you lose the election, but you won the election, but you lost the electoral vote. They actually had a daughter. Her name was Ruth. And Ben, did you know that baby Ruth is who the candy bar is named after?
I sure did.
So there you have it. Baby Ruth was born in that time, which I'm sure endeared people, because what's more endearing than a president having a baby?
Oh, I thought you were going to say them chocolate, but either way.
That too.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you've got to imagine. Think about now whenever anybody famous at all, even not really famous, but people follow them on Instagram, have a baby. Like, people just go crazy for babies, let alone, you know, the Prince of England has a baby or Kim Kardashian has a baby. I mean, people just go crazy. So, yeah, the president has a baby. Awesome.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen a whole lot these days.
Right. But you had a baby and people love that.
Well, I didn't get to become president, though.
You are kind of like the president of Election College.
I guess I'm not old enough to be president, or else I would be. So that's probably the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're such a youngin'. So anyway, so Cleveland, he was really bucking up against the whole Tammany Hall deal there in New York. Remember Tammany Hall? They were very,
vaguely,
very powerful among New York Democrats, but Cleveland didn't just give in to that special interest. And that's probably by and large what lost him the previous election. So he held his own and won New York this time.
he probably could have won pretty handily in that first election had he, or I guess his second election, but had he been willing to play the game the way that it needed to be played. But he wouldn't, because he's Grover the Good.
Yeah. Yep. So is this just a repeat of the last election?
Well, not really. We've also got the People's Party candidate, the People's Party, I guess you could say, the Populist, as it's well known.
I'm about to say, that sounds like a really good party.
Yeah.
Did they invent
Why would
the disco
you not
ball?
Want a party full of people?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I like them.
Do you think they had ice cream?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
John Travolta, I bet, was there. He probably sang the national anthem.
Definitely. Well, Jason, why don't you fill us in on the People's Party?
Yeah. So you had a more industrial society, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you still had farmers.
Sure. There's farmers everywhere. Farmers make the world go around.
Yeah. So you get the farmers and you get the labor and reform groups, right? And that's like the people.
The people that the People's Party refers to?
Yeah. And so you basically what you do is you have this alliance of common people, the populists, and they get together and they're like, you know what? I think we should have some clout in this whole big government that's of the people, for the people, by the people, all that.
Yeah, let's put that name to work.
Yeah. So they have a convention. Actually, they have a couple of meetings in the years leading up to 1892. But they have this big convention in Omaha, Nebraska, and they nominate James B. Weaver, who was from Iowa, to be the president. He didn't have very much opposition, and he was kind of had some track record to him. He wasn't really that controversial. So the Republicans and Democrats, they couldn't really get him on anything.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that he had going against him was that he was part of Sherman's March to the Sea. So the South was like, nope.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to vote for you. You wrecked our towns.
Right. But I mean, most of the population was up north. And then another thing that you had was the addition of several states out west.
Right.
In these past several years, you know, you had the
North Dakota came in.
Yeah, right? Yeah. The Dakota Territory became North and South Dakota, the states of. And a couple other states out west. So this proved to be pretty popular out west, the Populist Party did. And one cool thing about, I don't know if this is just one cool thing, it was actually several cool things that the populist platform really brought to the national awareness was, hey, why don't we nationalize the telegraph, the telephone, railroads? Let's have free coinage of silver, a graduated income tax, and the creation of postal savings banks.
You've got to imagine those first three or four there really appealed to the folks out west, because the East Coast is kind of getting a little bit crowded now. Obviously, nothing like it is now, 120 some years later. But at the time, there's not a whole lot going on at all out west. So to get anywhere, to get goods to and from is a really difficult thing. To be able to communicate quickly with anybody to and from is a really difficult thing. So just this idea that the, you know, everything should be extended the whole way across the nation and make things easier just appeals to the whole west coast of this or west side of the country.
Right. So really, no matter where you stand, and you kind of have to think of this outside of what we view politics is today, because you still have the concept of the role of the federal government versus states' rights and all of that. Yeah, that dynamic hasn't changed too much, but in a way, you need the federal government. You need that funding to build infrastructure in order to get goods across your country and so on. So this really speaks to that whole thing of, okay, we had that thought of manifest destiny. Let's go ahead, take the continent. Now, well, we've got these new states. We've got commerce needs. This is pretty necessary.
Yeah. And the People's Party, the populist, really had put together a platform that is still pretty impressive as far as non-major parties go. Just the amount of up to this point, we haven't seen one as well formulated in all of their thoughts and the cohesiveness up until this point, at least from what I've seen. So, I mean, they've got, we could talk probably for episodes about all the different points and facts that they have in their platform. But since we're an election podcast, we're not going to do that. But I really do encourage you to go on and read the platform of the Populist Party. It's just got a ton of stuff packed in there, and really you don't have any question about where they stand once you're done reading it. I think I spent more time reading it than I have any other political party that's current day to this point. So
yeah, so that was it, right? No more parties?
Well, I mean, you still got the Prohibition Party. They're still out there.
Yeah. They
doing their thing.
They were pretty calm, pretty tame, doing their thing. You also had the Socialist Labor Party. They basically called for a platform that was like, okay, let's abolish the positions of president and vice president, and
we'll all be president.
Yeah, but they nominated somebody for president and somebody for vice president. But they were just on the ballot in like 5 states. So not really a whole lot to say about the Socialist Labor Party.
Well, the campaign, let's get real here. The campaign is between the Republicans and the Democrats, for better or for worse. And we've got the whole idea of the tariffs still being a big thing. And everybody wants everybody to know what side of the fence they're on. But kind of the campaigning really stops. The first lady, Carolyn Harrison, actually dies. She had been in ill health since she was young, and it had only gotten worse over the time that her husband had been president. Mm-hmm. So she would go with him on travels a lot of times, and usually it was okay, but she'd actually gotten a cold at one point and got pneumonia, or I'm sorry, tuberculosis from it. And things just didn't get any better for her until she actually was laid up for the last 6 months of her life, pretty incapacitated, and passed in the White House in October of 1892. So it was just a couple weeks before the election. And when that happened, all the candidates kind of just said, okay, this isn't the time for campaigning. We'll just go ahead and put things aside and let things ride out from here on out.
Yeah. So election day comes and Cleveland wins the popular vote. It was actually the largest win and the popular vote since Grant had been reelected back in 1872. And the crazy thing about that was that it was like 400,000 more votes for Cleveland. So he won a lot more of the popular vote in this election than he had in, I believe, either of the previous elections. Now, one crazy thing to keep in mind, which this might just be stating the obvious at this point, but at this point, no president had ever won three elections, the popular vote in three elections. And and Grover Cleveland did.
Yeah, I mean, that's it probably didn't feel too great to him because he was president after one of those wins, wasn't after another, was again after the third. But either way, he won popular vote three times. So you got to be feeling okay about yourself at that point.
Yeah, you got to walk with a little bit of a swagger, you know. I'm sure, sure it didn't feel good to lose the Electoral College 4 years ago, but...
At least you can say, oh, yeah, I was president, but I lost on a technicality.
So. Exactly.
Also, just as a point of reference and where we're at, we don't talk much about Congress at this point. Maybe that's something we could do later on, talk about Congress, congressional elections and stuff like that. That gets kind of boring eventually. But anyway, the Democrats actually won the presidency and they won both houses of Congress. And this is the first time since the Civil War, people are kind of forgetting about the whole bloody shirt thing going on.
Right. So there you have it. Now, James Weaver, the populist candidate, he actually did carry a couple of states. He carried Nevada. He carried, I believe, Colorado and Idaho and maybe Kansas and one of the Dakotas. So he had a very good showing, but
yeah, he didn't quite make it.
He didn't.
Hey, one thing I did want to mention, there have only been a few instances where this has happened, but Cleveland actually got he got a smaller percentage of the popular votes in his second win than he did in his first win. And this doesn't happen terribly often. Usually when people get a smaller percentage, they end up losing. But it happened, let's see, was it Franklin Roosevelt in 1940 and 44, and then Barack Obama in 2012. So kind of interesting that he still won, even though he had less people vote for him than he did in his first election. And once again, that usually doesn't result in positive results for that candidate.
Right. I wonder what that relationship with between Cleveland and Harrison, if they ever spoke offline to each other, because that's got to be so strange to run up against each other. I forgot to mention this in the last episode, how when Harrison was being inaugurated, Cleveland actually held his umbrella up for him. There's even a picture of this, and just, you know, we've had people who have lost, incumbents who have lost the presidency, who would refuse to show up to the election, to the inauguration. It's just kind of an interesting dynamic there. You know, you hear about like Bill Clinton considers George H.W. Bush almost like a father figure to him, how they've actually become kind of close in recent years. I wonder what that relationship was like.
Well, you have to figure, too, with one of them being in and going out and the other one coming in and then he leaves and the other guy comes back into the White House. You got to figure, like, maybe one of them left some furniture there or some underwear in the drawers and they had to drop it off to him at home or something. So, you know, there had to be some of that kind of crossing paths too.
Right. So Harrison, he loses the election, but he wasn't considered that great of a president. You know, you don't really look back on his presidency and say, oh my goodness, he was just terrific. But he actually did go around and he spoke and had good contribution, had a good full life after he was president. And I think that's kind of cool. So
yeah, absolutely. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we kind of said the ending and Cleveland wins.
Yeah. Cleveland rocks, not the city. But not to bust on you if you're from Cleveland, but
This is like the second time in 4 or 5 episodes we've busted on Cleveland. So
yeah,
just saying, maybe it's not that great if it keeps coming up.
Beautiful, beautiful lake scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the city, actually.
Yeah, it does rock. Uh-huh. And Grover Cleveland rocks.
Right, right. Christmas is coming up if you're listening to this when we air it. And even if you're not, eventually it's going to come back around. And even if you don't celebrate Christmas, but you like buying gifts for people, go ahead over to Amazon and buy some stuff. But before you do that, go to electioncollege.com/Amazon and then buy some stuff. And anything you buy will cost you not a penny more, but it'll help us out. And it'll help us pay for things like hosting fees, all the new cars we buy with all the money from this podcast. It'll help pay for those as well. You know, all the simple things in life. So,
right.
Yeah, if you feel like helping us out and you're going to be doing your shopping on Amazon already, head over to electioncollege.com/Amazon and anything you buy will help us out in the long run.
Yeah, and don't forget, and we mentioned this in the previous podcast, that Ben and I do social media and podcast advising. So we are available. We have clients who we do have on retainer that we do consulting with, and we are also available for coaching and all kinds of good stuff. So if you'd like more information about that, shoot us an email at info@electioncollege.com.
I think that's everything. But if you want to say hey, go ahead over to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. By this point, surely you can find us. But if not, look up Election College and we're there.
Yeah. And is there anything else that we have to say about the election of 1892?
Thanks for listening. That wasn't really about 1892, but it sounded good to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see you next time for another riveting episode of Election College.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.